As you look through the New Testament, Thessalonians is the earliest piece of written Christian literature that we have. It's earlier than any of the other letters. It's written earlier than the Gospels. As far as we know, it is the first letter that Paul wrote that survived so that we could read it. And in it, you get a little bit of a different picture of Paul. Now, most of us know Paul in his curmudgeonly contentious self, when he's arguing with the Galatians or when he's instructing the Romans. But we don't get that here. Instead, we get a Paul who is in a kinder, gentler mode. Paul had come to Thessalonica and had been telling people about the good news of God's love in Jesus Christ. They had begun meeting in homes there. These were house churches. He was writing back to them after having suffered in a number of different places. And when he writes back to them, he writes with great tenderness, great fondness. He says, I didn't just offer you the gospel. I offered you myself, my very own self. Now, that's not like the Saul that we met earlier in Acts, is it? No, that Saul was ready to hold the cloaks of people who executed somebody who disagreed with him. But then he encountered Jesus. And from that encounter onward, he was never again willing to put someone to death just because they disagreed with him. Now, there are occasions where you think he's going to talk them to death because they disagree with him in his arguments, but he's never willing to execute them. Because you see, if God could love and forgive Saul, God could love and forgive anybody. And he recognized that. Even those who held different opinions than his. Doesn't mean he didn't argue with them. Doesn't mean he didn't think he was right and they were wrong in their opinions or their approach. But he also knew that God loved those persons just like God loved him. And what we get a glimpse of in 1 Thessalonians is that Paul. The Paul who has the understanding of God's love for all people, which allows him, on occasion, to deal gently with them. Now, I need to confess something here, okay? I had a completely different sermon to plan, and I had a couple of good quotes from a novel called Jaber Crow, which some of you may know, by Wendell Berry, and I'm still going to use one of them. But as I struggle with this sermon, thinking how best to present it, how best do I embody for you in words this Paul who's writing through to the Thessalonians, I went out and picked up the paper this morning, and on the front page there is an article, in fact there are several articles, that detail the history of civil rights, and there's a huge article about one individual, and I thought, that's who I need to tell you about. I need to tell you about Will Campbell. I first encountered Will Campbell when I was in seminary in the 1970s through his writing. And then in the early 80s, I actually got to meet him. We became friends over time. And I came to have a deep, deep respect for Will. We were not only friends, he was my teacher in a lot of ways. Will was born in Amite County, Mississippi in the 1920s. He was born poor, but had an opportunity to go to college and then had an opportunity to go to Yale Divinity School. Then when he finished Yale, he came back to serve a little Baptist church in Louisiana. The only problem is somewhere Will got the idea that God loved everybody and wanted everybody to be together and that it didn't really matter about their skin color. So he welcomed black folks along with white folks. And that didn't sit real well with the church he was serving. So he had an opportunity to serve somewhere else. He went to direct the religious programming at the University of Mississippi, where he continued this idea that if God loved everybody, then people of all colors and all backgrounds ought to be together. And it got him in trouble again. One of the occasions of trouble was when he was playing ping pong with one of the local African-American pastors. The president called him into his office and asked what he thought he was doing, and Will explained that those ping pong paddles they were using were separate but equal. That humor was lost on the president, and Will got an opportunity to serve somewhere else. Actually, he got an opportunity to serve organizing within the civil rights movement. Very often, his was the only white face in the crowd. When the students marched into Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas, Will was there. At the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, when the followers of Martin Luther King were standing on ground grieving, Will was there, the only white face in the crowd. Often he was there over the opposition of his own people and sometimes over the opposition of those in the civil rights movement. After a while, Will had had so many opportunities to move on to new arenas of ministry that he called himself a bootleg preacher. He didn't have a church that he served. He was just kind of like a bootlegger. He just kind of went out wherever somebody had a need, and he would serve that need. He would help them in whatever way he could. Like St. Paul, Will was kind of a curmudgeon. He could be cantankerous. He could be contentious. I remember one time we had some friends from Malibu, California come in. Their daughter was getting ready to go to college at Smith up in New England, and they wanted to do a tour of the South. And in that tour of the South, they asked if I could arrange for them to meet Will Campbell. And I said, sure, I can do that. So I called him up. I told them, now these folks are from Malibu. They're vegetarian. They want to meet you. They're going through the South. They want to tour the South. So we went and we visited with Will in this little house behind his house, which was his writing studio, I guess you would say. He had a barber chair sitting in it, and he would sit in the barber chair and hold court, and the rest of us would kind of gather around. And so they interviewed Will for a while, and it got to be lunchtime, and Will said, I want to take you to one of my favorite places. So he took us to his favorite barbecue place. My family and our vegetarian friends. They were able to eat the slaw, and they ate the beans, and I didn't have the heart to tell them that, you know, the beans had meat in them too. That was Will. That was Will. And yet there was a kindness in his heart for those who were wounded that I've experienced in few other human beings. After serving for years working in the civil rights movement, he became acquainted intentionally with members of the Ku Klux Klan. Now, he didn't switch his ideas about God loving everybody and wanting everybody to be together, but in the Klan members he associated with, he saw people with some deep wounds, and often their hatred came out of those wounds. And so he ministered to the folks in the Ku Klux Klan. Now, how could he do that? Aren't we supposed to take sides in this? Well, now listen, Will never hesitated to tell you what he thought, but he also never hesitated to extend the love of God to anyone he met, whether they disagreed with him or not. You see, I think that's what St. Paul learned on that road to Damascus. If God could welcome him, God could welcome anybody. Will's first book is a wonderful book called Brother to a Dragonfly. If you haven't read it, please do so. It will be on the final exam. In it, he describes his theology, which is basically that even though none of us deserves God's love, God loves us anyway. Now, Will says that in a bit more colorful fashion that I can't repeat in church. So if you're going to find out how he puts it, you're going to have to read the book. But that was his whole idea. It's that God loves us anyway. All of us. Doesn't matter who that is. All of us. And so he would go out into the countryside visiting folks, some with addictions, some living in hovels, some living in mansions. It didn't matter to Will. Wherever there was a broken heart and a broken life, he was going to be there. He was a most unusual Baptist preacher, in many, as you've already noted, I'm sure. He had a great love for Tennessee sipping whiskey. He had a great love for country music. And he had a great love for people. In another book of his called 40 Acres and a Goat, which will also be on the exam, he gathers stories about his moving to Nashville, about his finding the place in Mount Juliet where he has lived the rest of his life. He's still living. I'll get to that in a minute. But he also talks about the integration of schools and other institutions in Nashville, because he lived and walked through that. He tells a story of another very distinguished Baptist preacher. You know, it's a little strange, this Methodist preacher talking about all these Baptist preachers, but it just works out that way this time. His name was Kelly Miller Smith. He was the pastor of First Baptist Church, Capitol Hill, which was the colored First Baptist Church in those days. He tells a story about sitting with Kelly Miller Smith all through the night in that church, waiting to see if someone was going to throw a firebomb through the window, because firebombs had already been thrown into J. Alexander Luby's house, who was an attorney here in town. Firebombs had also been placed elsewhere. They sat there waiting to see if one would hit First Baptist Church. Wherever there was a need for someone to stand, whether it was to take a stand for justice or to take a stand for mercy, Will was there. I remember when I was serving at Blakemore a few years ago, I parked my car there on the street. I got out to go into the church, and as I was doing it, I heard several pops, this popping sound. I thought, what in the world? And all of a sudden, an automobile came around the corner, not on the street, but across the grass, across the lawn of the church, between the church sign and the building. I mean, probably doing 70 miles an hour, speeding across there. And then right after it came a police car. Now, they didn't drive across the grass. They took the street. And I suddenly realized those pops were gunshots. I thought maybe I'd better get inside. So I got inside. I went back to my office. It wasn't 3 minutes before I got a phone call. I said, Michael, Will Campbell, you okay? I said, yeah, why? He said, well, there were gunshots. I thought, man, this guy is prescient. He had been driving by with his son right behind these folks. He had seen all of this happen. And he borrowed his son's cell phone in order to call to make sure I was okay. That's the kind of person that Will has been all of his life. Occasionally, we pastors will serve communion at Richland Place, because we have a number of our members who live there, and there are a number of folks from other churches who come to that service. I had done that a year and a half ago or so. As I was walking out of the building, I heard somebody call my name. I looked back, and it was Will. He was there. He was staying there. He had had some strokes. His son was with him, but he recognized me. We were able to have a good conversation. And so I decided every now and again I would check on him when I was over there. The last time I checked on him, however, he didn't know who I was. But you know what? He still welcomed me as if I was his closest friend. And I understand he does that to the nurses, to all the people who serve there, to other visitors, to other residents. It appears that much of Will's memory has either been erased or sent to some place so deep that not even he has access to it. The people he knew, that brilliant, quirky mind that he used so well. But what's left is that sweetness of spirit, that sense of welcome to everyone. Maybe that's the last thing to go. Maybe in God's economy, when everything else is gone, if we practiced it throughout our lives, all the crankiness and the curmudgeonliness, they get tucked away somewhere. But that welcome of all people, knowing that God loves, believe it or not, even those who disagree with me, maybe that's the only thing that remains. And maybe that's the only thing that's important. We should all be so blessed. Thanks be to God. Before we do our creed, I want to read you something. This is the quote I intended to use in one of the Jaber Crow quotes, and I do believe it describes both Will and Paul, so I'm going to read it to you, okay? It says, "As I have read the Gospels over the years, the belief has grown in me that Christ did not come to found an organized religion, but came instead to found an unorganized one. He seems to have come to carry religion out of the temples into the fields and the sheep pastures, into the roadsides and the banks of the rivers, into the houses of sinners and publicans, into the town and into the wilderness, toward the membership of all that is here." Well, you can read it and see what you think.